Welcome to issue 40 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's been snogging Superman. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
Mwah, and I'm David McManus. Richard, how are you? It feels like it's been forever.
I've been giving Superman a beard rash. That's what I've been up to.
We should start this show slightly differently than we usually do and just say a big sorry. Because we have actually been a little bit late in getting this one out. There's been a few minor family catastrophes happening at this end of things, and it kind of just put everything on hold for about a week and a bit. But we're trying to get everything back together, and just so people know, this is the Where the Wind Blows issue, which is the one we promised for, was it last week?
maybe even the week before.
Something like that. And then we are actually doing, and this is going to be a shorter one, we're just going to do the book club, and then we are doing a full-length Behind the Panels, which should be out in a couple of days. So just to let everybody know. So, Richard, how you been?
I've been pretty well, apart from all the catastrophes and busyness and colds and festivals and all sorts of things that have been keeping us occupied.
I know, it's terrible.
Plenty of comic reading, of course. And this one we're doing this week is a bit of a corker. But honestly, I knew Raymond Briggs, I knew some of his other work, but I'd not really encountered this before now. So I'm glad that you chose this one this week.
I actually thought you'd read this, and this is a bit of a classic. But I'm so happy that you discovered something new.
Yeah, no, look, I don't know why I didn't know this, but there you go.
That's it, and it's a fantastic book, and we'll talk about this in a great amount of detail, but I just want to say, is there anything that you want to talk about or burning at you that we should talk about before we start on this book club?
No. 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 Look, it's been a big couple of weeks. We'll cover, as you said, most of the big news that's come out. So, look, as if you're a comic fan, you know there's been some pretty big film and TV in particular stories that have come out this week. Just in terms of the reading stuff, we'll cover the big what we've been reading in that show as well. But I've got to say, just quickly, if this is the first thing you're listening to this week, drop everything if you haven't read Justice League 12 and the Green Lantern Annual. That's exactly what you need to read this week. That'll sort your entire DCU out the way it should have been sorted out a year ago.
I'm gonna throw one more into that mix as well, which you haven't read yet, I know. But I'm also going to throw in, and there's such an unlikely candidate here, but I'm going to throw in Justice League International Annual. Now, this is a series of books that's been finished. They've canned it.
That wraps it up, doesn't it?
It wraps it up, and it actually has a few revelations in it which are going to affect the universe, the DC universe, for issues to come. So it is a really interesting annual, and I don't even know if you have to read the rest of the 12 issues to enjoy it, but the annual's a corker.
So my understanding is read Justice League 12 and then read Justice League International Annual, because you've got a little bit of a different perspective on the events of Justice League 12 in there.
Exactly, a little bit of a crossover.
Right. So that'll be definitely one I'll be cracking open next. Maybe right after the show.
Why not?
But David, look, you know, this is going to be a special short episode. This takes me back almost to when we were doing the holiday specials not too long ago. But I thought, well, we can't miss out on our vintage clips, though.
No, of course not.
So here's one that takes us back to the mid-80s, about the same time as our pick of the week came out. So see if you can pick where it's from.
Madam Secretary, I don't represent any country, but I'd like to address the delegates.
Well, in that case, you will need a sponsor. I believe that will do. Please.
Thank you.
Say something wonderful.
Madam Secretary, honorable delegates, ladies and gentlemen, for many years now I've lived among you as a visitor. I've seen the beauty of your many cultures. I felt great joy in your magnificent accomplishments. I've also seen the folly of your wars. As of today, I'm not a visitor anymore, because the earth is my home too. We can't live in fear, and I can't stand idly by and watch us stumble into the madness of possible nuclear destruction. And so I've come to a decision. I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
Yeah! all I can say to that clip is, destroy Superman!
Yeah, well, that is the Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, which, of course, gave us Nuclear Man. That was a bit of a personal project for Christopher Reeve, because he really wanted to make that film his anti-nuclear platform, which is very appropriate for the book that we're doing this week.
Absolutely. Look, and all credit to Christopher Reeve. He did his best. I mean, he wrote the story. He got them all together. He really wanted to make this one film. And then, of course, it just fell apart.
It is a bit of a train wreck, but you and I were talking earlier today before the show, and I've got a bit of a soft spot for this thing. We both have a bit of a soft spot for this film. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to dislike any of the Christopher Reeve Superman stuff. Even if it's worst moments, it's still your classic Superman.
Well, and it's because he's so good. I mean, that's the thing. You watch him because he is Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he will always be Superman as far as I'm concerned. So.
Absolutely. Speaking of superheroes and stuff, I just thought I'd bring this up very quickly. It's actually kind of advertising, really. It's not really advertising because they don't pay us anything, but I just wanted to make mention because we always talk about, you know, other things we listen to and stuff like that. I have actually listened to a whole bunch of episodes recently of the new Kevin Smith podcast, Fat Man on Batman.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great podcast.
Oh,
so
it is. Yeah,
if you haven't had a chance, or any of those people out there who haven't had a chance to listen to it, he sits down for like an hour to an hour and a half and interviews people who are absolutely vital to the Batman ecosystem. I just listened to last night his hour and 20 odd minute interview with Kevin Conroy, which was fabulous.
I haven't listened to that one yet. I remember hearing one he did with the voice of Harley Quinn, which was fantastic. Mm. That was excellent. I mean, I love the format of that show, and it is really good. You're right. He just whether these are household names or not, they will be because now Kevin Smith's involved in it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, people like Kevin Conroy have been absolutely vital to the Batman universe in its many forms, in video games, in animation, what have you. And then, you know, someone like, I mean, the one that really hammered it home to me was the voice of Harley Quinn, because this is a character, because of her characterization of that character in the animated show, Harley Quinn became an integral part of the actual comics universe. She was introduced into the comics as a result of that character.
In fact, actually, he has an interview with Paul Dini, who's one of the writers of the Batman animated series. It's actually the first episode, I believe. And he actually talks about the creation of Harley Quinn, and he talks about how does he feel about the fact that Harley Quinn has become such an integral part of the DC universe. Now, it's really interesting just hearing them talk about the fact that, you know, this is a character who was just a throwaway character who turned into this juggernaut of a character.
It doesn't happen very often.
No, not at all. And I'm actually currently listening to, he interviews Mark Hamill, and Mark Hamill has got so much to talk about that it's actually two episodes. It's a part one and a part two. And Mark Hamill it's amazing to listen to him because he is such a comic book nerd. And he knows everything about one of these comic book characters. But I got to say, the one thing that really, and it's funny because I guess, you know, we all get older and so forth. He just sounds so old now.
You know? Oh, I know.
So he doesn't sound like Luke Skywalker anymore. He actually sounds quite old, you know? And you get in hearing that, you go, I can kind of understand why he's retiring from Joker and stuff now, because you go, he's getting on.
Yeah. I mean, we forget that, well, you know, Star Wars was 1977, people. And even though we do watch it on a regular basis, that was a while ago.
Well, not only that, he actually, he talks about the fact that, you know, his early Broadway and blah, he has been acting for years before Star Wars. You know, so he's not as young. I mean, when he did Star Wars, he wasn't as young as we thought he was, you know? And so it's like, so it's very interesting to hear him now. And you go, boy, you've had a long and amazing career, you know?
He's turning 61 next month.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So I'd say he's doing pretty well for that. But David, it's a short book we've got this week. So I think we should just dive into it.
Please do. Now you are new to this book, so I'm really curious to hear what you have to think of this book.
Okay, should we play the theme?
Why not?
Okay, I've just got to find the theme. What the hell have I done with the theme, Dave? Oh, here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
So you might be wondering why we were a bit messy on the clip there. It's because Richard is playing the sound clips today because we're having a bit of a computer crisis in the studio here. So Richard's in charge today, so to speak.
I'm not used to playing the big people sounds. I'm used to throwing in the little bits and pieces, like, you know, whether I'm, you know, not so fast, nicotine, and things like
that. And that's what we love about it. But, you know, anyway, we'll have it fixed for the next show.
Right, but this week's show is—it's probably appropriate that we don't throw in too many wacky sounds because we've got a really beautiful book that we're doing this week. And last week we dealt with one of the big pressing issues of the 80s and early 90s, which was—I mean, it's still a pressing issue—but one of the big topical issues of that era, which was the AIDS and the miseducation around AIDS. And this week was one of the other big things that was kind of hanging over a lot of people's heads. And it's sort of hard to imagine now, which is the threat of nuclear annihilation. And this book by graphic novel by Raymond Briggs, When the Wind Blows, is only about 30 something pages. It's sort of written and illustrated almost like a children's book in a lot of ways. But the central theme behind it is an elderly couple dealing with the pending nuclear war and the aftermath thereof. Now it's a very simple story, David. David, this is one that you recommended. So why did you pick this one?
Well, I read this many, many, many years ago when it first came out, actually. And I read it because Raymond Briggs had written a previous graphic novel, which was about Santa Claus, and which I really liked. And it's the same illustration style. And I thought, oh, okay, this is another book by him, and I'll have a look at this. And I thought, wow, that's a little bit different tone. but it's a wonderful book, and I rediscovered it not long ago, and I thought, wow, this would actually make a really good one for the show, and immediately mentioned it to you and said we should do this, thinking without even hesitation that you've obviously read this and we should do it for the show. And of course now I find out you haven't, and that's really amazing.
Honestly, this is one of those things I probably did read back in the day, and it's just I just don't remember it clearly at all. But the funny thing is, a lot of the issues that came out of this, and this is why I must have read it at the time, because we were talking before the show about movies like The Day After, which was a TV movie in the US in the early 80s, and that was with Steve Guttenberg was in that one. And there was also the other one called Threads, was it?
Yeah, Threads was the British made-for-TV movie, which was kind of showing the whole concept of Threads was the aftermath. So after the nuclear war, how basically mankind breaks down and kind of goes back to, you know, no technology and so forth. And it was so powerful at the time that the British television, I think it was BBC actually, decided to show it commercial-free. And, you know, it was just the special presentation. And The Day After was so powerful that I think it was produced by, I want to say Lorimar or something like that, or Spelling or one of those. And they basically showed it cinematically in the rest of the world, which is how I saw it.
Mm. Understanding is Threads was written, it was done as a sort of a response to The Day After in many ways, because it came out in 84 and it was almost like a documentary style thing, wasn't it?
It was very dark and it's very quiet. There's no action or anything. Whereas The Day After is very bombastic and it's about, you know, the build up, the actual bombing, and then kind of mankind pulling itself back together again at the end after this Holocaust. But Threads takes a much darker approach to it.
And kids today may not – kids today, listen to me. Kids today may not remember this, but I remember being shown The Day After in school when the Cold War was still very much a reality. I mean, we're talking about the fall of the Soviet bloc didn't happen until the late 80s. So 83, 84, we're talking the height of the mutually assured destruction, you know, threat.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it started earlier than that, of course, because, I mean, films like Dr. Strangelove were talking about this as well. But throughout the 70s and the early 80s was like when it was like, you know, and this, sorry about this analogy, it's the only thing I can think of. You know how when you're getting a pimple, how it's building to a head, right? So this is what this was. This was the head of the pimple of the nuclear Armageddon. Everybody was like, at breaking point. And then when the wall came down and, you know, everything went away, so to speak, it was like, oh, okay, it's all over. But I remember in the 70s, they were even talking about, there was a syndrome. Where kids were becoming catatonic because they were so afraid of the nuclear Armageddon. You know,
and there's, I mean, look, there's lots of, we can make fun of it now. There were lots of, you know, like, sort of mockable, stop, drop, and roll kind of educational films and stuff that were out at the time.
In fact, which there's actually a great documentary for those who, if you can find it, it's like hen's teeth now. But I remember seeing it at the cinema back in the early 80s called The Atomic Cafe. And The Atomic Cafe was just old propaganda films from the 50s and 60s that had been re-edited together into a feature-length film just to show how insane the propaganda was. And it is brilliant. It is very funny in places and also incredibly tragic.
I mean, as you said, you know, great films like Dr. Strangelove very much made fun of this much earlier than the early 80s. But as you said, yeah, towards the 80s, the early 80s and the mid 80s, there was this, as you said, it was like coming to a head. And for comic book readers, we've already spoken about The Watchmen at great length. Mm. That's the kind of environment that The Watchmen was written in. This kind of, this threat of nuclear war, where that was the biggest global threat, nuclear arms everywhere. You know?
Let's just face it, Ronald Reagan, love him or hate him or whatever your feelings about Ronald Reagan were, one of his big things and one of the things he is known for is basically the man who finally brought down the Iron Curtain. And whether he destroyed his own country doing it or the politics, we're not going to get into it. But the point is, it shows you the time frame. That is when that's when it finally stopped. You know, it was
Yeah, and it wasn't until, like, you know, 87-ish, you know, with Mikhail Gorbachev and, you know, the reforms that came through as a result of that and the eventual fall of the Soviet bloc, you know, that this – it diminished. And now it very rapidly diminished and the threat was very rapidly taken away. But as you can see from the start of this book, there was a very real threat to a lot of people and it just became part of their daily lives. Now, for this generation of people that they're talking about in When the Wind Blows, it's an elderly couple who have been through the Second World War already. So their concept of what a war is very much rooted in that you know, mid-20th century concept of, you know, there's some bombings, there's some shellings, we all sit down and have a jolly good cup of tea afterwards.
And I love in this book how the fact that they keep actually talking about the Nazis and going, oh, no, it's the Russians, actually.
It is. And I'll just play. I think it might be an appropriate time. There was a film made of this. Let's just listen to a little clip from that.
Hello, dear.
Hello, love. Did you have a nice morning, dear?
Oh, all right, thanks. Rather uneventful. My life isn't very fast-moving or dynamic.
Well, you are retired, James. You do seem a bit down, dear.
Been reading the papers in the public library all the morning.
Oh, those things, full of rubbish. I never look at them, except the stars.
We must keep abreast of the international situation, Dux. The decisions made by the powers that be will get to us in the end.
Politics and sport, that's all they're full of.
Could affect us all, the ultimate determinant of that. They say there may be a preemptive strike, dear.
Oh, not another strike. It's wicked. I'd have them all locked up. Blessed communists.
Well, it all looks pretty empty. It's not that sort of strike, Doc.
Sausages or beef burgers, dear?
Sausages, thanks. It looks as if the balloon could go up at any moment.
What balloon? Mashed or chips?
Chips, thanks. Oh, I don't know. The balloon. Or is it a maroon? I can't remember.
What are you talking about, James?
It looks as if it's going to be a war, dear. Yes, they say it might break out at any time now.
Well, at least you won't be called up, James. You're far too old.
Oh, thank you, my beloved. I'm still 2 years younger than you.
Well, if the worst comes to the worst, we'll just have to roll up our sleeves, tighten our belts, and put on our tin hats till it's VE Day again.
It won't be like that this time, love. I think this one is called the Big Bang Theory. It's all worked out by brilliant scientists.
Well, we survived the last one. We can do it again. It'll take more than a few bombs to get me down.
Yes, we must look on the bright side, Dux.
Yeah, so you can see, I mean, listening to that as well, I mean, that for me put the voices very much, you know, that were very clear in the book.
And they are the voices you imagine them to be. It's not like when you saw your first Charlie Brown cartoon, you go, that's not how I pictured them to sound. This is exactly how you picture them to sound.
Yeah, no, because these are people. Basically, it's set in rural Sussex, in the UK, and that's you know, they're called the Blogs. It's James and Hilda Blogs, basically. So it's virtually Joe Blogs. You know, this could be anybody, and their concept of what a war is in the 21st century. He's got slightly more idea because he goes down, you know, once a week or whatever it is to read his newspapers at the local library.
Yeah.
But he's actually genuinely concerned. But like a good citizen, he starts building his fallout shelter per specifications, per the pamphlets. He doesn't say it in that clip, but he says earlier in the book something along the lines of, you know, it's a good thing I went down there and got these pamphlets, otherwise we would have been high and dry. We wouldn't have known what to do.
Well, that's right, because it's got to be the government specifications.
And, like, you know, the sort of the insanity of this is that, you know, he's got these pamphlets from different government agencies, and one of them's telling him to do it one way, and another one's telling him to do it a completely different way. And he's saying, well, which one is it? And it's a very minor thing as well.
Yeah.
And he has to go down, and he calls up his son to find out, you know, how we can measure 60 degrees so we can have his shelter at exactly 60 degrees. Right.
And the guy at the shop actually cut him a little triangle.
Yeah, with 60 degrees on it, because they were out of protractors and pretty much everything else. And I think, obviously, he said there'd been a lot of, you know, panic buying down there, and obviously everyone's worried about it in the area, but not enough to close the shops, evidently.
And I love the ominous sense of at a certain point in the book, you start going, maybe it's just in their heads, maybe it's just about panic. And then we get those ominous two-page pictures with, like, the bombers flying in.
Yes.
You know, and you go, oh, this actually is real. You know, and it's like, this is actually going to happen. And how are we going to make these little comic book characters actually make us feel the emotion that we need in the situation?
And it's weird. And just in a moment, they, you know, it all switches. For example, there's this really lovely, cute and slightly sad moment where he's talking about how maybe he's meant to be in a, you know, hide himself in a paper bag. because that's meant to insulate, you know, against the heat or something. You've got him standing there in these two brown paper bags. It's a ridiculous scene. And then all of a sudden, in a moment, in a heartbeat, we interrupt this program for an official government announcement. An enemy missile attack has been launched against this country in just over 3 minutes. And he's like, God almighty, ducks, let's get in. You know, it goes. And then, you know, suddenly, and he's yelling at her to get in. She said, all right, I'll just go and put the washing in. And she said, no, get in now. And she's like, don't talk to me that way kind of thing.
I love the understated Britishness of it. Like when the white blast goes off. And you just have the speech bubble just goes, blimey.
Yeah. They're getting it. And the last thing she says before this is one page of blinding white light is the cake will be burned. and then, as you say, the first thing back, and you see a couple of pages of, you know, heat waves first thing, and then the first speech bubble, as you say, is blimey. And then, you know, it's kind of like, oh, that was, you know, rather bright, wasn't it? And then it's like, I suppose that's it. It's over now. And then I feel a little bit shaky. And then over the course of the next, you know, 10, 15 pages, it's them gradually deteriorating from the radiation, which they know nothing about.
No. And they don't understand why they're bleeding out of their orifices or turning green or doing all these things that are happening to them. They're trying to get on with life.
Yeah.
And she's more upset by the fact that the curtains are destroyed.
Yeah, the pillows are gone. Yeah, and it's like there is and this is the beauty of this book. Most of it is conversation between the two of us. They actually go and sit outside at one point, and they're sitting in the garden. You know?
Yeah, and they're wondering why everything looks dead. The grass has died. The fruit.
But they're saying it looks awfully clear. You know, and this is a really, I mean, it's a heartbreaking book because it is this lovely couple at the center of it. Who, you know, are singing quite literally right up until the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is, in many ways, it's, you know, it's the human cost of these things as well. I mean, that's very much the story. But also, you know, there's a little bit in there about, you know, general ignorance and how big political things happen with very little reference to the little people.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the real charm of this and kind of what Raymond Briggs is trying to get at is basically that there is a situation where we don't really understand geopolitics. We don't understand. We just want to get on with our lives. And a situation like this where it just happens out of the blue. I mean, it all happens very spontaneously. And I think these people are representative of those small people who just, they don't understand what the ramifications of this are. They don't live in a big city. They're not particularly well educated. And as you said at the beginning of the show, their concept of a war is a very different thing. And he's just, sorry, go on.
I would say it's Jim's unshakable belief as well that like, you know, the government knows what it's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And they keep saying, they make reference to it several times to the end of this book where he goes, they'll be along any time now and they'll look after us.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing as well. It's that kind of very much that middle, you know, middle England, middle, you know, very middle, you know, political leaning. You know, they're not far left, they're not far right. They're a little bit conservative, but you know that comfortable middle section of the population that has an unwavering belief that the government knows what it's doing, and if they just fall in line, then everything will be okay. If they do everything to specifications, you know.
I love the fact that one of the things that occurs to them is, like, first of all, they put all these bottles of water out because they're told by their government pamphlets to put out water. So they put out all the bottles. And, of course, the blast knocks them all over. And he goes, maybe we should put corks in them. And then later on he's going, oh, the milkman hasn't been yet. Oh, and he's wondering why the paper hasn't been delivered. You know, it's like all these strange little things that he just wants to get. It's like they just want life to go back to normal.
And the thing is, I mean, obviously it never goes back to normal, and the book just gets bleaker and bleaker and bleaker as it goes along. And I think the fact that this book starts out on such a chipper, you know, very English note, and then ends on such a it's bleak. I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, the book ends with the two of them singing and praying in a in their what's left of their fallout shelter. Basically bleeding from their gums.
Well, yeah, and I think we're supposed to take from, I mean, this, we always talk about this show spoiler, but I think we're supposed to take from that ending, they're probably not going to wake up. This is the end. But even in that moment, there is still this absolute love for each other that they're just like, it's okay, ducks, don't worry about it. You know, we'll be okay in the morning. And it's like, and it just gets quieter and quieter and darker, and that's the end of the book. And you sit there and go, wow, that is just... And you kind of sit back from it, a little bit like you do when you sit back from Pedro and Me, where you kind of sit back going, what the hell did I just read?
And I think that's one of the things. Very few of the books that we've read, we can actually say that we've sat back and, as you say, and been deeply affected by them in some way. You know, it's not just, oh, that was a brilliant story, when we've read many of those. It's not that was a very clever story and I was there the whole time. This is something that emotionally affects you. And, you know, for something that is... two characters who pretty much just talk for 30 something pages.
It's the genius of Raymond Briggs.
Yeah,
I was going to say, it's the genius of Raymond Briggs that he can take something. It isn't a big story. It isn't, you can't, there's no way you can sit back with When the Wind Blows and say this is an amazing story. It's a very simple thing. It's two people in their little farmhouse and what happens to them. But it's the raw emotion of it.
It's like Art Spiegelman. He's actually based these on his own parents. Yes. Whereas with Mouse, you know, that was very much an autobiography. Art Spiegelman has worked himself or members of his family in various guises into other bits of his work. You know, there was a later book that Raymond Briggs did. I think it's something in Ethel. It's called Ethel and Ernest, A True Story. And that's actually about his parents. But in fact... once you read that, you can see that these two characters were very much based on his own parents and that very Britishness and very, you know, earlier generation that they, relate to.
Yeah.
Now, understanding is that there was an earlier book called Gentleman Jim, which, according to the Wikipedia entry, it says When the Wind Blows is a sequel to Gentleman Jim.
Oh.
Now, I don't think – I think it's a sequel just in the sense that the character of Jim is presumably in that earlier book as well.
Wow, I didn't even know that existed. I'm going to have to see if I can find it.
I don't think – I mean the actual main entry for When the Wind Blows doesn't mention it's the blogs as were characters previously seen in the book Gentleman Jim, and that's all it says. So – you know, maybe if we want to spend a bit more time with the Bloggses, go back and check out Gentleman Jim.
Which isn't quite so tragic, but probably.
If it was a sequel, on the other hand. But then it is, I mean, that is very Raymond Briggs. I don't know. He's created these two characters in a book called Gentleman Jim, which was a lighter book, one assumes, and then kills them off in this horrible way in the book When the Wind Blows. Now, the animated film that came out was directed by Jimmy Murakami, and it came out a couple of years later in 86. Now, those two characters were played by two very English actors and actresses, which was Sir John Mills and Dame Peggy Ashcroft.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and they were, and you heard those voices there earlier in the show. That movie has a lot of things significance to it. It was had a anti-nuclear theme on a lot of the songs that were on there as well. You had very active people like Roger Waters and Genesis, and that opening song we played by David Bowie. It was very much a movie of its time as well, but it completely captures the book. Read the book, read the graphic novel, but the film is a perfect companion to it. It doesn't, you know, erode it in any way. It follows the story to the letter, to the dialogue.
And always read the book first, because the book is the masterpiece here, and the film is an adaptation.
Yeah, one of the bits of trivia about the film is that at the end, there's also, just while we're talking about sounds, is there's Morse code being heard tapped out at the end of the closing credits, and apparently it spells out MAD, which is short for Mutual Assured Destruction.
Ah.
So that's just a little bit of trivia there. But look, I actually watched the movie again this week after reading the book, and as I said, they're perfect companions. They don't. Nothing takes the movie doesn't take anything away from the book at all, and really it just gives voice and movement to these characters who are already so well written. And we should say that the format of this book, the panels are very small, and they're densely packed with dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We say it's only a 30-page book, but if you actually put those in normal panels, this is actually like a 100-page book.
Yeah, and so like it's obviously written to be something that can be easily disseminated, because yes. You know, people are more likely to read this than they would a 100-page time, particularly in the early 80s. This is before, once again, this is before the prominence of direct marketing of comics, and before trade paperbacks were all the rage and so forth. You know, this is a different time, so 36-page comics were far more manageable things in that era.
This was in an era when, and it's actually in the same format, that when it's published, it's in the same format as like an Asterix and Obelix book or a Tintin book.
Yes.
So you would have found it in any normal bookshop, even the shops that didn't carry comic books as such. They were carrying books like this.
Mm. Hmm. And it's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this is a comic book, but written for non-comic readers as well. So, which is why it's such a wonderfully written book. It's written by someone who doesn't exclusively write comic books. He does write children's books. It's one of those things. We talked about it possibly on the film show when we talk about films that were written. I think there was a movie we were talking about once, not to review, just in passing, the movie The Boy with the Striped Pajamas, which was a book. It was a movie and a book about the Holocaust, written so that it could be understood by a child. And this book is about a potential threat, but also more generally about putting blind faith in the government in a way that could be understood by, you know, not only the people it depicts,
yeah,
but also, you know, by a very broad audience, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it is an instructional piece. It's an educational piece. It's also a piece of entertainment, but it's also a very tragic and very brilliantly written story. So just as much as I have with Mouse and Pedro and me, I think this is one of the must-read books that we've done.
Absolutely. I'm going to concur. I'm going to say this is vital reading.
Thank you for reintroducing me to this, because I undoubtedly came across it as a kid, because it would have come out at the time when I would have been reading.
Well, look, this is my gift to you after you gave me the gift of Mouse.
Well, there you go. Thank you.
So, yes, now everybody should go out and get it. This is actually fairly widely available. You can find it in most bookshops.
Mm. It's been in print pretty much continuously since 82.
Yeah, and well worth having a look at. It's not your usual capes and comics as we do, but it is something that is in the medium and vital. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah, look, go out and check. I mean, look, as David said, available anywhere. And the film, not quite as readily available, but I think you can get it on DVD in the UK.
Right, okay. Well, yeah, I'm going to have to try and track down a copy because I'd really like to see the film. I saw the film many moons ago and have very, very few memories of it. So I really do need to see it again.
And there was another interesting fact is Iron Maiden's song called When the Wind Blows was on their 2010 album, The Final Frontier, possibly named after a Star Trek film, which was also based on the graphic novel When the Wind Blows. So this thing has influenced everybody from animated films to David Bowie to Iron freaking Maiden.
I had no idea that Iron Maiden's song was based on this.
Apparently.
Huh. So, what do you know?
According to the Wikipedia entry, which is where I get all of my knowledge from.
Because it's so reliable. Richard, I think we're going to sign off for this week. We are going to come back and record a full one. What's our next book?
Our next books are the 2008 run, or the run that began in 2008, of Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, this is something that, David, you've been kind of fond of lately.
I've been kind of obsessed by it, actually.
What we're going to do for the next issue is do issues 1 through 25 of the Guardians of the Galaxy that began in 2008. And then we're going to maybe talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that came before that, including the Annihilation stuff, because David's well and truly read a lot of that. And also the Thanos Imperative, which came immediately afterwards, which sort of concludes that storyline in a lot of ways. And that's I think there's about six issues and a couple of one-offs that came after that. But the main thing we're talking about next week will be the 25 issues of Guardians of the Galaxy. And from all reports, this is what the Guardians of the Galaxy film coming out in 2 years' time will be based on. So this is us laying our groundwork for our exploration of the Marvel Comics universe that will be adapted by the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Absolutely. And I, for one, have actually gone and read the entire saga from Annihilation through to the Thanos, and I can't wait to talk about it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. Well, I haven't read quite as much as you, but I've read most of Guardians, and by the time we've recorded, I will have read all of Guardians, and I'm going to read the Thanos Imperative as well. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a great series from what I've read so far, so looking forward to talking about this one. But until next time, you can find me on therealbits.com. That's the RELLbits.com, or you can just hit me up on Twitter at DVDBits.
And you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Richard, it's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad we're back.
I'm glad we are, too. I didn't realize how long it had actually been, because we're just kind of chugging along, and suddenly it's been about 2 weeks since we did the last one. We should probably do another one of these.
Yeah, no, it's once again, I want to apologize. It's been a rough trot over this. I mean, last weekend we were supposed to do stuff, and it just went boom. And so it's like, oh, my God. Okay, so without going into too much detail over, you know, private family matters and so forth, but it was a bit of a problem. But things are getting back on track now, so we should be back on track pretty much permanently. Now, hopefully, if all goes well, I shouldn't say absolutes because you never know what's going to happen.
But until next week, I mean, for us, it's going to be a couple of days away, but and you will too. You'll only have to wait a couple of days for this next episode because it's a bonus week because you missed out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, this one is late. The other one will be on time.
That's how we're going to rationalize this. All right, folks, see you next episode.
See you then.
So long, child. clothes.